Ever felt frustrated being told PMS, heavy bleeding, and cramping are just normal parts of life? You're not alone. I loathed my monthly cycle for decades. That all changed when I earned 3 health coaching certifications, discovering something incredible. Your period is vital. It is an outward sign of your inner health, and it holds the key to unlocking your full potential. I've been there battling heavy, painful periods, and I turn them into cycles with minimal PMS and cramping. Today, I'm on a mission to share that information with you. Pour a cup of your favorite drink, get comfy, and grab your headphones as we embark on a candid and empowering journey of self-discovery. Together, we'll demystify menstrual cycles, explore cyclical living, delve into natural birth control, and guide parents through those crucial period talks with tweens and teens. It's time to break the taboo around menstruation and embrace the wisdom it holds. I'm your host, Heather Allmendinger, and this is the Embracing Flow Podcast. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Embracing Flow. I would like to introduce our guest today, an expert at Embracing Flow, Dr. Omotma Simmons. Welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me today, Heather.
I am so happy to have you on today. Guess here is why. Dr. Omotma is a naturopathic doctor, has been in practice for almost 20 years. She has a specialty as an FABNE. We will be going into that in a little bit, which is a fancy acknowledgement that deems her to be an expert on hormones in a holistic way. For majority of her practice, she has focused on fertility and over the years has helped the birth of thousands of healthy babies. She is a best-selling author of the book, Fertility Secrets, What Your Doctor Didn't Tell You About Baby Making, that reveals a lot of her research and real life experience beyond what's commonly taught to us as medical professionals, and shares the major reasons why she is so passionate about educating women. She believes that all women should have access to knowledge about their bodies and what she has come to title womb wisdom, which is the source of our creative energy, babies, or other creations. Over the years, she has learned that one of her gifts is to take lots of pieces of information and convert it into a distilled takeaway that someone can put to use instantly. So she has stepped into the educational space of training the next generation for fertility specialists that approach fertility from a holistic perspective. She also runs multi-six-figure business based on her female superpower, her menstrual cycle, which I absolutely love, and acknowledges that to teach, train, and coach on female entrepreneurs who want to up-level their business without the grind and the burnout. She feels that womb wisdom is a core source of creative energy that we as women have access to. So while most female entrepreneurs learn to grind like men, we have all been there. She thinks that time that we access, it's about time we access our superpowers. I as much as I wanted to shorten that, I couldn't because there is so much value in just your bio. I loved your bio.
Thanks, Heather.
Oh, you're welcome. So before we dive into how you got in to where you're at, what a FABNE is, because I had to look that up. So I was like, what is that? And everything that you've done over the course of your professional life and womb wisdom, I ask the same question so that way we can build a community of listeners. Around what age was your first cycle, and kind of do you have a story around it? Did you know it was coming? Did you not know? What can you share, one of those first stories, and about what age did you start cycling?
Oh, well, I started cycling late, late at the time, which I got my first period like just before I turned 15, and I felt like my friends already had their periods by then, but no one talked about it, like literally never. And my mom certainly didn't talk to me about it, and she, like, I had seen in her bathroom like these fat things, the pads, right? Like they were so thick and heavy and gross, and like, And that's what I used for so many years. Like, it's crazy to think about it now, but oh my God, like how little I knew. My first conversation with women around menstrual cycles wasn't till I was like way in my late 20s. And I remember a conversation with one of like some of my girlfriends, and they were talking about menstrual cups. And I was like, there's no way. I just can't imagine that I'm gonna stick a cup up there. Like, I barely know how to wear tampons, you know? And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, I always use pads because that's what my mom did. And she never talked to me about tampons. I didn't, like, I knew they existed, but they felt overwhelming. So I think for a lot of my life, periods have been kind of a little bit of a mystery, a little bit of like, we don't talk about this. And I guess, sorry, I went all over the place, but I remember I just have so many memories. Like, my grandmother implemented, like, there's a cultural thing that Indians do, which is women are not allowed in the kitchen or in a temple when you're bleeding, right? And the idea is that you're dirty, quote unquote. So I grew up with this shame and like, oh, ick feeling around periods. And it's kind of hilarious that I do fertility now because I only talk about periods all freaking day. I talk about periods. So it's like such a drastic change from where I started out and like what I was brought up with. But I think that's partly why I'm doing what I'm doing, right? Like, I have been there where people don't talk and it's shameful. And of course, like, fertility has this whole shame aspect to it. So I see a lot of like overlaps in how my early childhood life set the template for what I think we can break through now.
It's I understand like that whole shame thing, and it's I've reframed it as, all right, cool, I get the days off. I don't have to go to the kitchen. All right, cool. Going to the temple, that might, it's a little sad. Especially for that reason. Because we are kind of, we're releasing very nutrient dense fluids and other things during that cycle. But I also understand that it's considered by different different cultures to be unclean. I may not like it, but I respect it.
Well, and I think that I think it started out in a well-meaning place, right? Like, staying out of the kitchen meant someone else was serving you, right? If you weren't allowed in the kitchen, like, if that was the boundary, then you were somehow getting fed that had nothing to do with you actually going and cooking your food. So I think it started out from this place of like, you're going to be taken care of. What it turned into over generations is like the decrepit version of that, which was, oh no, you're dirty, stay out there. But I think, like, you know, as I've grown older and I've learned about red tents and like culturally, there was this aspect of like, women go and bleed and they're going to be taken care of and supported by the community who's not bleeding right now. But what as things evolved and we stopped living in communities and we stopped, like, we no longer do those things and we're expected to live in these insular homes, but we still like carry those traditions over. Like, well, those traditions don't convert if you don't live in a community that can serve you. So yeah, you know.
How from your beginnings, because you said about being shamed, not it's shameful, and what we've discussed. How did you get into the fertility space? And exactly, I know that the FABNE is a acknowledgement of you being the expert. Can you explain a little bit more of what that FABNE is, and how you got into this space, and how it's evolved since you first started.
Yeah, totally. So FABNE stands for Fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Endocrinology, which, as you said, is a really fancy way of saying I'm a hormone expert done naturally. What's unique about this certification is that there's only 20 of us in the country that hold it right now. And it's kind of a it takes a while to get the certification. But I helped write the exam for that certification. So I'm kind of like one of the OGs in naturopathic endocrinology, and we help create like a curriculum. And how do we expect someone who is a naturopathic endocrinologist, like you are an expert in hormones, that doesn't mean you know one little aspect of hormones. You have to know like the breadth of all of endocrinology to be able to get the certification. And then, of course, I've kind of focused all of my clinical and career on fertility, which is such a narrow aspect of even that, right? Endocrinology is this huge thing. And then the focus on fertility is this tiny, tiny, tiny little thing within that. So yeah, there's definitely like such a breadth of knowledge there. And there are a lot of naturopathic doctors that are amazing, but they're not necessarily hormone experts. So this is a little bit of like a differentiator. If having the hormone expertise is something that you need, then you want to find a naturopathic endocrinologist or someone that has this FABNE title. And then fertility has changed a lot. I've been doing this for like 15 years, 18, 19 years as a naturopathic doctor and 15 years specialized. So, gosh, I feel like when I started, there were like four naturopathic doctors that said they did fertility. There was very little like research, but also like awareness around what natural medicine is for fertility specifically, and how, like, at which point people were seeking us out has kind of changed. Like, I think there are more people now that are like, I don't want to do IVF. What if I don't want to do IVF at all? Versus back then, it was like, oh, I've already done like four or five cycles. Now, can you help me? So that's shifting a little bit. But I still think that the overwhelming majority is still IVF focused, or I'm going to take supplements myself and then I'm going to do IVF, which is very, very interesting to me. It's all just like fun to watch, you know?
When it comes to fertility, you brought up about before the individuals going IVF and then they go come and find some an endocrinologist who not naturopathic endocrinologist. What do you do differently? Because I know other IVF, all right, you're trying to get pregnant. How do you do things differently than the IVF routes for those that don't understand? There is a difference between these paths, or what do you teach? What do you bring to the table other than a traditional fertility clinic for the IVF, or the artificial insemination?
So I want to, there's actually another thing that's also happening that I want to speak to, which is the DIY. I'm going to Google the crap out of fertility and like do all the things, right? And AI is my doctor. Like that's happening, that trend is happening. So I want to speak to that versus naturopathic endocrinology versus the conventional like IUI to IVF approach. So let's start there. The conventional approach is beautiful. It's actually like I've been in the room when IVF is happening and they're doing the implantation and like having spiritual experiences while that's happening. It was like really trippy. At the core of it is overriding what the body is naturally doing in order to control it, to do what we wanted to do, right? And again, I don't want to make it sound like it's negative. I think there are lots of amazing things about it, and IVF, like, it is one of the most incredible sciences that has emerged in the last 25 years. And we need it, right? Like, we're going to need it more and more. So, IVF isn't going anywhere. I think it's a beautiful technology. The problem is that there is a lot of miseducation around what IVF can do for you. I'll give you a quick example. I talked to, and that this is going to be perfect to also show the differences. So I talked to this couple last week, and we did a deep dive review of all of their labs. So they have collected like so much information in the last month and a half that it was designed to help them discover what is happening under the surface. Why are they getting pregnant and not staying pregnant? So the goal of all of those lab tests that they got was, how do we figure out why? And that's the question that naturopathic medicine, naturopathic endocrinology can help solve. Because in our book or our minds, it's not where IVF or the conventional world sort of says fertility. Oh, we're talking about FSH, LH, beta HCG, progesterone, estrogen. Those are the hormones we're going to manipulate. And those are the hormones that, as we manipulate them, you're going to get pregnant. In the naturopathic world, we go a layer deeper. We know that the entire endocrine system is interconnected, it's connected to the psychoneuroimmunology aspect. So, what's happening in our brains and our minds and our immune systems is impacting endocrinology, our hormones. What's happening in our gut is also impacting our hormones. And then, what's happening in our endocrine system in and of itself is interrelated. So, what's happening in your brain and your adrenals and your thyroid is all impacting your fertility hormones. So there are layers upon layers of these interconnections, and your estrogen being elevated can have eight different root causes. It could be your estrogen's not detoxing, your liver's clogged, your gut doesn't have the right microbes, it's affecting your vaginal microbiome. Like, there's so many of these nuanced things that if you're not seeing the whole picture, you are missing. So I want to bring the DIY approach in just for a second, which is, here someone looks up and says, how do I lower my estrogen? It's too high. So she Googles, how do I lower estrogen? And AI will do a really fantastic job pulling all of the internet and the web and all of that, and give you a list of supplements that are going to help you lower your estrogen. The problem is that if your estrogen is high because of reason six and not two, you would have a very different approach to how a naturopathic endocrinologist would deal with this issue in front of them. So now you have people that are doing this DIY stuff without fully understanding what the impacts are going to be. And even as a naturopathic doctor, I'm like, if we think about this stuff very deeply and we say, hey, if we give you this herb, like we were just talking about someone who we were going to give rosemary to, and we're reviewing it as a team, and we said, well, if we give her rosemary for her immune system, she had an autoimmune thing. And if we give her that, but we also know that rosemary decreases conversion from this estrogen to this other estrogen, are we going to create more issues? So that's the level of detail that we have to think about every supplement. And then you see people come in with garbage bags full of supplements, and you're like, oh my God, right? Like in my brain, I'm sitting there like, holy shit, the interactions that are happening here. So it's really, really, really important to understand that supplements are awesome also. But if you're taking the wrong things, and if you haven't done this level of analysis to get to the answer, then you're working at the superficial. And sometimes that could work. The problem is, too many times it throws it more out of whack. And then the conclusion is either the supplements are garbage, or the IVF doctor says, oh, yeah, that's just trash. There's no research on that. You did the wrong thing. Just do IVF. And it's like, well, no, the problem isn't the supplement. The problem is that it was taken by the wrong person who didn't know how to analyze everything. All that to say that those are the approaches that are really popular in the fertility world. And where we come in is really that deep level analysis. So, this couple, going back to the woman that I was talking to like last week, they found out just before that meeting with me that they were going to get two free IVF cycles through her insurance. So I'm like, cool, that's awesome. It's great to have those, right? But now she's comparing what we offer to IVF, which is not comparing apples to apples. And she opted, they're going to opt to do the IVF cycles. And I was like, okay, that's your choice. I have told you what's happening under the surface. And she has like six or seven things that are under the surface. Mind you, she's never had struggles getting pregnant. She's had three pregnancy losses. Nothing that IVF is doing. There's one thing that IVF does, which is be able to monitor for chromosomal anomalies that can support healthy pregnancy. But if you don't have chromosomal anomalies, and that's not the reason you're not staying pregnant, there's nothing that IVF is doing that is going to help her stay pregnant. So I wish her the best. And I was like, you know, I'm totally like, I support you to do whatever you feel like is best for you. But I want you to realize that these root causes are not going away without you dealing with them. So it's like IVF is awesome. And if you have these root things happening under the surface where your body is not functioning optimally, then it's going to be a waste, unfortunately, of a lot of time and a lot of money to go through these cycles, the impact that that has on your body, only to come out on the other side feeling like, what the hell? Why didn't this work? This was supposed to be the magic bullet. And to that, your doctor saying, sorry, it's your age. And that to me is the heartbreak. It's like, damn, you knew that there were underlying issues. You didn't deal with them. Then you went to IVF. And now you're being told by your doctor that, oh, it's your age. And that, like, it takes away any layer of control of the ability to do something about it. And instead, you're stuck with, like, oh my God, I'm doomed. Like, this will never work. So, yeah, you know, so those are the differences between the approaches and what I think a little bit of like why I think it's so important that people really consider how they can address the underlying layers before they get into doing IVF, if that's what they want to do.
And it's that's kind of where I love what I do. I love that you're in the fertility space. I temporarily tried that and it's a lot of hand holding for me. It's a lot of puzzle pieces to try and figure out. It's almost too much of a puzzle for me. I love educating on how the endocrine system is connected to the reproductive system, how the thyroid, the brain, our heart health, how our kidneys, how our adrenal, how everything is impacted with our cycle. So that way they're kind of what, and starting young. So that way teenagers understand that, okay, I'm having these cramps. Now I've heard that periods are to be pain-free. Why am I having this? What is going on? What am I doing that's impacting my body? How can I improve it, not fix it, not heal it, because that is outside my scope, but teaching them how nutrition plays a role in all of this, how water plays a role, just those basic pillars. So that way, if they do come into a situation where they can use you, they've already learned to track. They know when their cycle's starting to go a little bit wonky. They know there might be an underlying condition, and they know that they have to look for help and get that under in a better position before they can get pregnant or before
Absolutely.
they try IVF, IUI, or even just fertility in general. It's I'm the basics. Because we weren't taught the basics.
Yes, absolutely. We never were taught the basics, and we're not taught what even a optimal period should feel like, right? Like it's so normalized to have pain, to have symptoms. I've heard women who have like 10 out of 10 pain. They're curled up in bed for 2 days, and they're told by their doctor that they don't need a workup for endometriosis. They don't need anything. They're fine and they should try and get pregnant. And I'm like, there is no way this woman has 10 out of 10 pain. I don't care what your pain scale is. 10 out of 10 is way too high. And and like it's just like it's mind-boggling to me. And she doesn't have endometriosis because there's no pain with intercourse. And to me, I'm thinking like, yeah, that's not a thing. Like you can have pain with your menstrual cycle, you can have pain with sex, you can have pain with poop. Like I don't care what level of pain, when it's abnormal, you need to be screened for endometriosis. So, it's mind-boggling how many women are sitting with like levels of symptoms that are normalized to them as, oh, that's just part of being a woman. No, sorry.
No,
We no
exactly.
longer doing
Sorry.
that.
Yeah, no, we're opening up that door and shedding that light that that is what we've been told is common is actually a red flag, and change trying to change that narrative that that's our body's signaling that there's something going on, be it PCOS, endometriosis, even just insulin resistance, even if it hasn't gotten to PCOS, just that insulin resistance, there's something going on. And I love that you're looking at that and you're sharing how our bodies are interconnected. And we've talked about toxins because we talked a little about endometriosis. But toxins, how they can impact our fertility, how they can impact, even if we're not looking to get pregnant, how they impact our cycles and our endocrine system, how we feel. Would you be open to sharing how toxins kind of impact our bodies? like wh and where are where can you find them? Because I
For sure.
It's
So
scary.
absolutely. Oh my God. And I'll just say, like, for those people that are not trying to get pregnant, toxins are relevant. I said this on a interview last week. Toxins, most reproductive toxins are also carcinogens. So I don't care if you're trying to get pregnant or not, everybody needs to be paying attention to the fact that what reproductive medicine is coming up with, like, hey, this affects your reproductive system, it almost always is a carcinogen. So pay attention, folks. Like, this is not just about getting pregnant and having babies. This is really like our reproductive health is the core analysis of our overall health. So,
I say
yeah.
our cycles are an outward sign of our inner health. They are a doctor's visit every
Yes.
single month. You
Yes.
just said it
Yes.
differently, but it's the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like it's your report card, quote unquote, of what's happening with your health over the course of a month. So only we as women have this ability. Like, men don't get this feedback. So take the feedback. Toxins. Toxins are like, I'll just go through like which there are so many toxins, but let's go to the big ones and give like an overview of how toxins affect our reproductive system. So toxins can affect the thyroid. Thyroid is a really big gland that regulates so much of what's happening in your body, and it's very fragile to the outer world. So you have toxins come in, they're going to affect the thyroid. That's a big one. The liver, because the liver detoxes all of your toxins out. If it has too many toxins to deal with, it can't do its job very well. It gets burdened. It's like overworked, underpaid most of the time. And then you have your gut, which is another major way that your outer world stays out of your inner world. So there are all kinds of barriers in our gut that keep toxins in where they can be pooped out. But if that barrier is impacted, if the microbes in your gut are dead or imbalanced, they're going to allow through toxins that should not cross the gut barrier. So then you have toxins going in through the gut. And then the last that we don't often think about is our vaginas. Like, that's another place that toxins can actually enter. And not just in the form of a penis, but also tampons. Like, tampons are probably the biggest way that toxins are getting into our like the very thin protective layer that we have in our vaginas. So it's so important to understand that toxins can come from all of these different things, but they are going to impact our reproductive system through all of these pathways. And then the big ones that I pay attention to, so vaginally, glyphosate is the biggest toxin. Gut will also absorb glyphosate. So non-organic food or non-organic tampons, and even tampons that say organic on the cover, there's a whole like 60% of our tampon is made of organic cotton, but then the other is not. Like, what's happening? Or like 2% is organic. Like, there's a lot of misleading information on the front of a box of tampons specifically. Most cotton plants are grown with pesticides, unfortunately. And cotton is what we want and need in a tampon because it's absorbable. So most of the time they're using cotton that's non-organic. If they're using organic cotton, you want to think about, like, is that cotton field right next to the one that uses non-organic, and who's screening this stuff? So I'm like convinced that we just need to stop with the tampons. Like, just move to a menstrual cup. Say goodbye. The trash that it creates in the environment is just not worth it. So menstrual cups or reusable pads or reusable underwear, that kind of thing. Anything that is reusable and is not continuing to increase exposure locally to a very frail mucous membrane that protects you. The other glyphosate, also in food, non-organic food, is going to impair the microbiome in your gut, which then causes that barrier to be weakened and you have more toxins floating in. So those are going to be the big ones. Other than that, we have BPA or bisphenol compounds, BPA, BPF, BPS, and then phthalates, which are present in fragrances. And those are the two big, like, endocrine mimickers. So they mimic hormones that then confuse the body about, wait, is this my hormone? It doesn't know what to do with it. And some of them are bioactive, which means they will bind to the same receptors that your actual hormone would bind to and have effects that that hormone would create, which is extremely problematic. If you have a plastic compound, BPA, that binds to an estrogen receptor, it activates the system as if there's estrogen in the system. If you don't have estrogen, so like we can take just one example. Estrogen in the reproductive system is activating the release of luteinizing hormone in the brain to cause ovulation to happen. So your eggs, as they develop, are increasingly producing estradiol. That estrogen is going to the brain and saying, hey, time to switch from FSH to LH to make ovulation happen. The problem with that is BPA comes in and binds to all those estrogen receptors in the brain. Then the brain is like, oh, there's enough estrogen. And you could potentially ovulate too early. You would probably have not great quality eggs when that ovulation happens. And if you don't have great quality eggs, I'm sorry, pregnancy ain't happening. So you really have to think about, like, yes, the toxins are a problem in and of themselves. But when you're talking about fertility, like, what is the impact that that toxin is now going to have on the way my hormones are fluctuating through the month and the signals and the compounds that are being created off of that, that now are going to impact whether or not I can get pregnant? And additionally, can I stay pregnant? So those are all the things. And then, so BPA from plastics, all the plastics, and even the paper receipts have BPA in the ink. So getting rid of those, switching to glass or stainless steel containers, glass bottles, etc., things like that. You guys have all heard this before, I'm sure. And then re really focusing on going fragrance free is a really good use of your time because fragrances or perfume, quote unquote, is on a lot of products. It's from in cleaning products, it's in the candles you're burning, it's in your makeup, it's in your hair products, like it's everywhere. And if you can lower the number of fragrances that are going into your body, you're going to support your hormonal system to function better. So getting rid of the perfumes is good. And then we didn't talk about skin, but we're absorbing so many toxins right through our skin. So the stuff that we put on our skin is going to be extremely important. And if we can limit the exposure of how many toxins go on our faces before we get on Zooms is going to help our hormones. So those are, I would say those, if we can start doing the big things, you can certainly do more. But I think that those cover the big ones that I think of when I think of the impact that we have on our fertility. And it's the same for men. So the same toxins, glyphosate, obviously they don't have vaginas. They don't have to worry about the local exposure, but they do need to worry about phthalates, BPA, BPS. And they're, I always say this example because men love, I don't know what it is. They love cars that they love their car to smell great, right? And they love it to be clean. And so many of those car cleaners are like super toxic. And then you like put on an air freshener thing that is going to be all the phthalates going into your car, and you're in this like very contained environment driving for however long you drive every day, you're getting a lot of exposure. So they may not use makeup, but they're using all of these products that are then going to affect their fertility in a big way. So, really, really, really important for the men to realize that they too are getting this impact. It's not just the women.
No, because it's it, and correct me if this is an incorrect statement, but men also have estrogen in their bodies. So these toxins are actually increasing the estrogen in the men's bodies.
And get this. So
Okay.
endocrinology, yes, I'm gonna take that. So testosterone converts to estrogen in the male body, in the female body also. So the end product is estrogen. For men, if you have estrogen going up, your testosterone may be not going up, but your estrogen is going up through the exposure of these toxins. That estrogen is the feedback loop to the brain to stop the production of testosterone. What? Like, we have a testosterone epidemic where so many men are deficient in testosterone and they're being pumped full of testosterone with injections, with patches, with whatever. Yet no one is talking about the fact that if you are exposing your body to estrogen, your brain is getting the message to shut off production of testosterone.
Yep. So less sperm. Less sperm. It's not weight that gives the bros, the men, the bosoms. It's
It's the
food has
estrogen.
some of it, but it's the estrogen, which is why I bring this up, because it's we're seeing more men. One, the testosterone epidemic, the fact that men just aren't producing the progesterone or the testosterone, but a lot of that is this estrogen feedback. Even with, and this is what I learned through my certification, and I'm not sure if you heard of it, but the cervix. One of the things that moms may not understand, actually, most, yeah, I've come across quite a few nurses that don't even understand this or have learned this in doctors. The cervix has a very thin layer to it when we're born. And it doesn't start developing a thick layer until puberty. So you've it's kind of if you take your just general skin, at the beginning of puberty, it's like almost right at the point where it would hurt if you touch it. It's a very thin layer of skin. But as puberty goes through and up until our early 20s, we develop a layer up to 30 layers thick around our cervix. So if you're using tampons that have glyphosate, that teenagers use tampons, and you're putting that close to your cervix, which is to stop the bleeding, that's kind of where it sits. You actually have kind of an unprotected cervix in a way, and that glyphosate is getting into your uterus, it's getting into your bloodstream. And the other thing that I've learned through my certification with fertility awareness is birth control delays the maturity. So it delays that la those layers of skin, which then opens, I mean, there's just a lot of layers.
And birth control, like, Birth control is a whole thing we could do, but it's essentially if you think of your most doctors are thinking about the reproductive hormones as isolated in the pelvis. The problem is that we're not accounting for the brain hormones that are interconnected to the reproductive hormones. So you can come with birth control, and it's basically like a disconnect between your brain and your ovaries. And you keep that disconnection for long enough, and then you get off of it, and you're like, great, get me pregnant. And that's not going to work because there's no connection between the brain and ovaries. They've been disconnected for so long. And now we're like, hey, you guys start working again, start talking to each other again, and make a baby. That's not gonna happen. So, yeah, birth control has its own, oh my goodness, like so many
That's
things.
his own episode.
Yes, definitely.
In the little time we have left, would you share womb wisdom and kind of a little bit on the whole cyclical living thought process? Because I know that I've talked about it on my podcast. I do it in my own life. But having somebody else explain it may resonate a little bit better than how I share it.
For sure. So I came into it because of fertility, right? Like I've been observing hormones and like what's happening in people's cycles. And like it's become like a very popular thing now. So yes, I've heard you talk about it on your podcast. And what's the core of it is that our hormones are an indicator of where we are in life, in that phase of our cycle. And what I think of as womb wisdom is being in touch and aware of that environment is really helpful in A, your fertility or fertility awareness if you're holding off till later in life. But B, like using that energy in your business and in your work life is like a game changer. So the way I think about it is winter, spring, summer, fall. Like seasons are really easy to think about. And your winter is going to be menstrual phase. It's the phase that you're actively bleeding. That phase goes into spring as you get out of that phase, but the rest of your follicular phase is spring. Winter is like a really good time to go inward. It's a good time to meditate. It's a good time to like be with yourself. And in business, I also think of it as like be with your business. So a lot of reflection on what are the numbers? What is it telling me? What do I need to cut down? What do I need to like stop committing to? because I tend to be very overcommitted. So like, what do I need to cut out? That's happening in my menstrual phase. Then in the spring, your hormones, your estrogen is actually starting to go up. Estrogen is a really powerful hormone. I call it the superwoman hormone because as that estrogen starts surging, and estrogen's like made out to be the bad guy. I'm like, I don't know about you, but I love estrogen. Like, thank you, body, for having estrogen because that's my get shit done phase, right? Like, I am so productive and so on top of things. And to add to it, when you get towards that, like just before ovulation, that estrogen is almost at its peak. It's also a really good connection hormone. So I try to plan all of my podcast interviews and oh, I need to film. I'll be on camera for a few hours. Like all of that is happening in my follicular phase or in spring. And then summer is the short phase of actual ovulation. So the few days before, the few days after, the actual ovulation event is going to be summer. And summer is, again, taking advantage of all of the estrogen, taking advantage of luteinizing hormone. You're feeling juicy. It's like, oh, it's so good. And I'm a summer baby, so I love summer, right? It's my favorite. And it's also my favorite hormonally. So I capitalize on summer all day long. And then we're in fall, and fall is going to be the time to harvest. And this is often what we don't do very well. And it's reflected in the prevalence of luteal phase defects. It's reflected in our society because we don't value that season, right? In agriculture, it's very valued. There's fall harvests and festivals, and there's a lot happening because that season is to celebrate your wins. It's to acknowledge everything that you've done in the seasons leading up to that. And it's a really good time to take your lessons, take in what you've learned, integrate, and just see what still fits, what doesn't fit, what do I need to throw away, what do I need to keep. I have a practice called compost or cauldron, which is compost is like all the stuff that you're letting go of, and cauldron is all the stuff that you're feeding and turning into a soup.
Like
So
that.
like that little like witchy
Yeah.
brew, put all that shit in there. Put all the good stuff in there. So that practice I do in my luteal phase as a way to just have some reflection and really figure out what seeds I'm going to plant in the winter of the following or season. So that's the gist of it. Like that's how I'm using it, and I've seen a lot of like at least in my life, I started applying it about 3 years ago, and that was simultaneously like I had started a podcast, I was doing my teaching, and still like seeing clients full on. And I was like, oh my God, this is a lot. Like, what is happening? I feel so busy all the time. And I had to find a way to like organize my life so that I didn't burn out. And I was like, wait a second. Like, I have all this stuff for fertility. Like, why don't I apply it all? And like within a few months, I was like, oh my God, I have more energy. Oh, I'm like doing more, but it doesn't feel like I'm doing more. I've just made it more streamlined. It's more efficient. And then I started bringing it into my startup. And my co-founder is a man who like is very comfortable talking about periods and all of that, of course. So I was like, hey, so we're gonna adopt this thing in our practice, that like you don't bother me to create content on different phases of my cycle, or you just like expect that it's only gonna get done in this one phase. And he was like, okay, I'm willing to try it. And we started implementing it in the startup, and we were like, whoa, this is cool. So lately I've expanded, like mostly I would talk about it with women entrepreneurs, but I'm starting to find that men entrepreneurs or co-entrepreneurs can help support and align to that pattern and actually benefit from it, right? We have phases in our business where we're like super in go mode, and then we have the chill out mode, and we actually like are doing the reflection pieces. So we've integrated so much of that into how we are doing the business. And I have some entrepreneurial friends who are men that are starting to apply it on a moon cycle. So if they don't have a co-leader that's a woman, then just sync to the moon, like do this with the moon. So they're starting to apply it and see, and it's still like early phases, but I'm trying to coach them to see like, how does this affect your eight-figure business if you are able to like think and have your meetings based on where you are in the moon cycle? And it's really cool to watch. It's like, well, they're benefiting from something that is traditionally like women keep to themselves. And it I think that there's a wisdom in it for all of us. It's not just for the women.
Yep. And it's coming out more and more, and that's how I let my son. I have two boys. My older son's like, Mom, I tune you out. I said, I understand that. But by understanding this cycle in general, it will allow you to be a better friend, a better partner, a better parent, a better coworker, and a better leader. Because you don't have to ask us when we're cycling. You don't have to. You can just look at us productively. Just look at what we do on an output basis. You will see when we're in follicular and ovulation. You can see when we're in menstruation or in the later stages of luteal. It's shown in our production numbers. It's shown in what we produce. So I'm educating my older son, my younger son here soon, but definitely my older son, about this. And I've seen studies where they've incorporated cyclical living into their business. They've looked at where they made the most money and they didn't correlate it to where they are in their cycle. And once they became aware that during certain phases they're making more money, they're like, wow, I was doing this without realizing it. But now that I know this, it's,
Like, imagine the power.
yeah, it's a huge, huge superpower. And why it's embracing flow. It's you're embracing your superpower.
Absolutely.
This has been absolutely fascinating. Where can individuals find more about you, your book, your podcast? Where can they find you?
Absolutely. So the book is on Amazon, Fertility Secrets, What Your Doctor Didn't Tell You About Baby Making. I do have a podcast. It's called Egg Meat Sperm. You can find it on your favorite podcast platform. And we have a YouTube channel also, same Egg Meat Sperm. If you, in case you like to watch instead of listen. I'm one of those people. Like, I'll focus better if I can see someone. So I like to watch my podcasts. And then we have Instagram, which is usually where people will connect and find me and get lots of loads and loads and loads of information, which is at Holistic Fertility Doctor.
All right. Well, before we go, do you have any wise words of wisdom to take with us?
I'm going to share what I plan to share, and we didn't get into it on the podcast, which is when we feel safe enough in our bodies to create new life, we are safe enough to live life fully. And so the core of my message is that as we create safety, and safety is in the form of the environment, the toxins that we're exposed to, like, how do I limit that exposure? That's a level of safety, safety in our relationships, safety in our endocrine system, and how that interacts with our metabolic system and our immune system. Like, we're creating safety on all of these layers. And when we get to that point where our body is like safe enough to have a child, we are safe enough to like live and fully embrace the power that we have within us.
That is beautiful and absolutely so true. Is it if we are in that fight or flight, if we do not feel safe, our body will not allow us to really to bring new life into to be the creators that we are. Be creators in bringing another human into the world, create a say, just creation in general for our lives.
Create a business, create a flourishing home. Like, it doesn't matter what you're looking at, all of those things rely on the safety that we feel within our bodies and our nervous systems.
That is some deep thinking to leave us on, and amazing words to leave us on. I love that. Thank you so much, Dr. Omotma. Yes, I'm getting it. For taking us on this enlightening journey into fertility and toxins, cyclical living, womb wisdom. I loved having you here, and there is so much more that we could go into. So I see some possible future collaborations here again.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Heather. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, wonderful. All the links that we talked about can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much, listeners, for spending your time with us today. If you found a nugget of wisdom or a moment of empowerment, our mission is accomplished. Do you know someone who could benefit from this information? Please share Embracing Flow with them. In every phase, embrace it, love it, crown it, and always be Vividus. Until next time, talk to you soon. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow the show, submit a rating and review, and share it with your friends. Visit my website, embracingflowpodcast.com, to receive your free guide on 4 ways to decrease PMS. The link is in the show notes. Information shared on the Embracing Flow podcast is for educational purposes only. It does not constitute medical advice. Until next time, love hard, laugh often, and always be Vividus.